Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3.
Money and Me, the property edition on Money FM 89.3, brought to you by Simlian Group, creating space, creating homes.
This is indeed the property edition, and that is why we're sitting across Muhammad Ismail Ghaffour, Chairman and CEO of PropNex Limited, talking today about renting versus buying. Most Singaporeans think buying makes more sense in the long term. As prices of property rise, though, how important is it for Singaporeans to think about their options a little bit more broadly? Let's put the question to Muhammad Ismail Ghaffour. How are you this morning?
Amazing, really.
That's good to hear. Okay, so most Singaporeans automatically default to buying is better than renting. Renting is throwing your money down the drain. Why do we always assume that? And is that always the case?
I think in Singapore, it's relatively unique, I must say, when we compare it to cities of the other part of the world. There are many people who are more favorable in terms of renting. But somehow in Singapore, it is also partly a government effort very much earlier years to have an asset ownership. And today we are talking about, as of last year, 91% of Singaporeans owning a property. And when we just go back 40 years ago, in 1980, the percentage of ownership was only 58.8, and today we are talking about 91. Probably Singapore has the highest ownership as far as property is concerned. Yeah, but on the other hand, when I look at it, are there positive things about owning a property? Yes, definitely. But I will not say renting is totally not a consideration. There are people who still consider renting, but in my view, I always think renting can be considered at best as an interim option. It has to be short term. But when we talk about long term, owning gives tremendous amount of benefit in terms of keeping pace with inflation and as well as capital appreciation and many other things that comes with it.
Okay, so if people are listening in right now and they're not quite sure, they're on the fence, what are some factors that they should think through before renting or buying in Singapore?
Put it this way, if you buy a property, even a two-bedroom, say for example, about $700,000 a private property, and if you take a loan about $500,000, your monthly installment over a period of 30 years at today's current interest rate at 2.5% comes to about $2,500. While on the other hand, if someone who's going to rent that same unit, a two-bedroom, you end up paying also a $2,500. Then the key question here is this: on which side of the fence do you want to be? Do you want to pay annually $30,000 and over a period of 10 years, $300,000 to someone who owns it, and eventually that person is possibly will have a capital appreciation? And we are talking about capital appreciations not being speculative. Take inflation at 2 to 3%. A property that is $1 million in down 20 years down the road to be 1.5 to 1.8 is almost given, merely keeping pace with inflation. Mm-hmm. So that is the part that I used to say, that if you are looking at long term, it is always good in Singapore to own because it is made affordable in many ways. I mean, we can always start within a public housing, but on the other hand, for those people who can afford, can go into private property. But all said, there are still people who may not be able to start to own, simply because one of the key considerations of owning a property here is this: the huge amount of down payment. And we are talking about today's, it is about 25%. And that is a huge amount. Even at a property buying at $600,000, and if you say 25% is $150,000. That's why what I'm saying here is it's okay to rent, but let it be an interim option while we continue to save the money, and eventually maybe one should seriously consider owning a property.
Okay, I like that. So it all depends on how much time you have on your hands to maybe accumulate that 25%, right? And doing the sums of balancing how much living space you need when it comes to renting as you sock away your money, hopefully.
Yeah. One of the things here is this. You see, sometimes people say that, wait, I want to buy my dream home. And if I ever buy, it have to be a dream home. And therefore, they would like to save and accumulate enough to buy a dream home. And I always challenge this thought, because simply because a dream home never comes. Because as we start increasing our status, our pay, our lifestyle, our dream keep changing and we always want a better home. I always say here is this, always have a foothold into a property. It doesn't matter even if it is an HDB property, taking advantage of the huge amount of grant as your first base, and as such keeping pace with inflation, and after the 5 years of an MOP period, for those of you who choose to, can always upgrade to an executive condominium or private property. Therefore, saving just to enter the market may be a tough call because it takes a huge amount of discipline. But on the other hand, again, when we look at it, what is one of the major disadvantage of renting here is this. Just now we given an example of a property about 700,000, monthly installment 2005, rental 2005. But the monthly installment of 2005, we could pay it using our CPF. Ordinary account.
You mean servicing the mortgage?
Servicing the mortgage. Yep. But if someone who's going to pay a rent, you are just going to forego your huge amount of cash.
Out of hand, eating into your savings.
Yeah. And that will make it difficult for you to further save money, because your income, you're putting, have to part away with huge amount of your cash money into a rental. And that's why it snowballs. And for a long period of time, one would not be able to literally buy a property.
I like that. You know, you don't have to think about aiming for your dream home. Your first home doesn't have to be your dream home.
Yep.
Basically, get a foothold in the industry. What are the financial costs that people need to consider when looking at buying or renting?
I think one of the key things here is this, you know, especially when you're buying, other than your initial down payment of 25%, you still have a stamp duty, which is about 4%. It's a little bit graded from 1, 2 and 3, but on average we should say about 3 to 4%. There will be a small amount of legal fees to be paid in purchase process. All in all, we are talking about 25, about 30% of cash plus CPF. As long as we have CPF, we can utilize. What we need is minimum at least about 5% cash and the stamp duty component. The rest could be utilized. So that's as far as from a buying process is concerned. But on the other hand, there is also a maintenance cost when people own a property. You have to pay an annual property tax because you're owning a property. Yep. And as well as you have your maintenance costs, especially if it is in a condominium, a two-bedroom can even command anything between $200 to $300, and therefore
per month.
So these are all the costs, the variable costs that one will have to consider. But from the rental perspective, you are free. I mean, you just go and spend, and you probably will have more money. You don't have a lot more responsibility as far as the maintenance, whether it's a leakage of the flooring or ceiling or piping. You just let the landlord be burdened by it, but you just be carefree.
But you can't knock a nail in the wall as well.
Yeah.
You know, there are different concerns if you're a renter as well. Help us understand the different grants that are out there if you're buying versus renting.
I think as far as grant is concerned, we are only talking about for public housing. And today we know, especially in September 10th, when the government increased the enhanced housing grant by another $40,000. And today we are talking about a young couple with even in a combined household income of $5,500, are able to secure a grant of almost up to $120,000 CPF grant. And that's huge amount. And when you use that to buy a resale property, because $120,000 comes together with the proximity, because living close to the parents and the first-timer grant and all this added into it. And therefore, one would be able to buy a resale flat today almost comparable or even cheaper than a BTO flat in some of the areas in Singapore, and when we consider the amount of renovation already done by the previous owner of the HDB flat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So these are some of the grants that one could take advantage to start. But as far as private property is concerned, it's all cold hard cash and CPF. Mm.
We're taking questions as well. 971-78893. Did you just mention that there are grants that a first-timer can use to buy on the resale market?
Yes. Yeah. As long as you are a Singaporean and you have not purchased a BTO and you're going to buy a resale flat, actually the maximum amount of grant one could qualify is up to $160,000, but that is only for household income of less than 1,005. That's why I choose to give an example, because it goes on a sliding based on as your income increases, the grant becomes slightly lesser. But even if I take a 5,500,000 in a household, one could still qualify for $120,000 from the government as a grant to buy their first matrimonial home in the resale market.
That's a lot of help.
Yeah.
Besides renting, people are getting excited these days about co-living. I wonder if you can help us understand what co-living space is and how different that is an option between buying and selling.
I think it is interesting. In fact, I tend to think like we are going back to time 50 years ago, 60 years ago, when our parents, because of not having enough in terms of the ability, tend to do co-living, which means to say very small rooms, but the kitchens are communal in that everybody, and toilets are common when people used to use that. And that used to be the start of Singapore in the early 60s and probably in the late 50s. But today, and that's exactly what I meant by the modern co-living.
So it's trendy again.
Yeah, it's trendy. But the difference here is why people do like co-living here is this. In fact, they do organize some regular events, and people like, especially the millennials, they do not want to be burdened by a huge house, having to maintain, having to clean. What they want here is this, they want lifestyle. They would like to have a sufficient space for their room, but they have got more activities around, and as well as common living area, common cooking place, and they will want to be with like-minded people to share their thoughts and things like that. And that's, in fact, picking some popularity, I must say, in Singapore, though it took some time in the last couple of years when we started, wasn't really in full swing. But right now, I think more and more people have shown some interest, and we are moving towards this direction. And one of the greatest advantages here is this. In a co-living space, one could just rent a room with a toilet at just $800 per month for a small bedroom.
Okay.
Which beats in compared to having a house being rented at $2,500.
Sure.
Therefore, you bring down in terms of your commitment, and yet you share the facilities and in terms of the lifestyle, and you are more cash free. And that's the greatest advantage of co-living as in a space.
Wow. Can you share some of the co-living spaces that exist here in Singapore?
Yeah, there are a couple of. I think one of the recent one that was very recently operated by JTC Corporation is to put the concept of a price tender and build. And these things are coming to be in completed soon, I must say. There are also the other operators like the Escort Limited also have been getting into this market as well. And we have got the other developers like Lo King Huat to manage the Farrer Park in Singapore, which is also expected to be completed in 2021. So generally, I think this is something that is coming more new in the market, but more people are coming to acceptance.
So you're saying it's already here?
Oh, it's already here in Singapore, yes. Yeah.
And increasing in traction, clearly, with these big developers coming on board.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, as more people want a sense of community, co-living space becomes an upcoming trend. In fact, you know, when I think of the shoebox apartments, I think they'd be much more livable if they use some of the common space and turn them into a co-living space.
Yeah, maybe. But the other thing here is this, it is not meant for everybody, I must say.
Really?
This is something, the co-living space, I think first and foremost, you must have a shift in the perspective of your mind and the paradigm
of what a house is.
What is a house is, it is more of what is living life is. Yeah. You see, we grew up as Singaporean, as I said, 91% of home ownership. We always want our private space to be really private. And therefore, when we say co-living space, it is a shift in the perspective of sharing, even the cooking aspect, or for that matter, your living hall. What do you want to play? What do you want to see? What do you want to enjoy? I mean, put it in our home, we just can be in half dress and just like a couch or laze around, and it's totally different. So it's a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
But that's something the millennials liked it, I think. They prefer more of interactions with people, and they don't want in a huge space to be burdened with all the cleaning.
Wow. And I suppose as a buyer or a renter, the interesting thing will be how you invest in co-living space as well in future, I think.
Yes, true.
Right? Yep. How you enter the market. Okay, so finally, Ismail, I know that you entered the property market. When did you enter the property market? When you got married?
I mean, I was quite blessed. I always say that one of the greatest advantage of being married early here is this. You have a double income to enter the market. So I married at a very young age of just past early 20s.
Yeah.
And therefore, we started our journey with buying a HDB 3-bedroom. That was our first matrimonial home. And I remember those days, it was barely about $70,000,
$80,000. Wow.
And then we sold that, and then we went on to buy our first condominium, which was Normanton Park. And you'd be surprised to know, in those days, we only bought it for $90,000.
Wow.
And last year, it went on block at $1.8 million for each owner. But honestly, I'm not holding on to the property to have that windfall. Yeah. But I moved on, and that's how, and this is one of the things that what I might like to trying to say to the listeners here is this.
Yeah.
It's okay to start with a co-living space if you liked it. As I said, I'm always saying that it's from an interim perspective, or to rent. There are also people who rent not because they don't have the down payment. They read the market differently.
Hmm.
They think that, hey, in a transition, currently the property market may slide down for another 10% in the next 2 years.
So they'll wait.
They wait. Hmm. And therefore, because of their gut feels and their opinion, they say, if I'm going to buy a property at $2 million in 2 years down the road, it might be, say, $1.8 million. Why do I want to go and enter the market? So on a transition, that's why, as long as short-term and in an interim, it's perfectly okay. But eventually, the advantage of owning a property is tremendous.
Okay, so question, should they buy or should they wait? 2020, your predictions?
I think this has been an amazing year, and we have seen record numbers of new launches being transacted in July, August, September, exceeding 1,000 units, simply because it is a buyer's market. So developers are truly enticing the buyers to come and pick up the unit at a very, I must say, fairly discounted and very sensitive pricing. And I must tell you, for this year, one of the best-selling development, which have sold more than 800 units for the first 10 months, is Treasure at Tampines. One of the key attributes of Treasure at Tampines was because of its price point. We are talking about at entry level per square foot, some of the bigger units at 1,200 plus per square foot to about 1,300 plus for a smaller unit. And because of the varying sizes, it becomes at the entry level very affordable at 600 over 1,000.
Okay.
And that has been doing very well this year.
Any other affordable launches that have caught your eye recently?
I think there are many, I must say, because one of the key thing here is this. Developers today do tend to build some in every development, at least about varying from 10 to even 25% small bedrooms. And we are talking about the small bedrooms, the one bedders, about 500 square foot. And the minute if it is in a one bedroom, if it is 500 square foot, then I think it becomes relatively affordable. The price range from anything between $600,000 to $700,000, and it is available in most part of, in fact, in almost every development today carry a one bed.
And that's an okay foothold as well, in your opinion?
I think generally it's okay. Today we are still talking about at entry level. First and foremost, if a young couple or somebody is want to be a single, owning one, a small bedroom and staying there and paying towards your own mortgage, and using your CPF money at the end of 20 years, and it is going to be tremendous. I mean, if I just give one last example,
okay.
I'm still holding on to a property by the name of Costa Rue, and I bought that property 21 years ago. At a price of about slightly above $700,000. I just received in July from my bank a letter to say that congratulations, your loan has been fully paid and please come and collect your title deed, failure of which we will charge you $300 for safekeeping.
Okay.
Yep. I don't need them to safekeep my title deed. Basically, they're saying that we have made enough business, you please collect and move on. But my message is not that. My message here is this. In the last 21 years, I only stayed there 1 year, and the last 20 years, I've been renting it out.
So it paid for itself.
It paid for itself. And today the valuation...
Is it a one-bedroom or
two-bedroom? It's a two-bedder. Oh,
okay.
It is 1,000 square foot. You know, the older designs of the two-bedroom tend to be much bigger.
Big, yes.
Yeah. So today, based on SRX value, we are talking about 1.4 million. And over the last 20 years, it has doubled. And all my outlay at the start of 21 years ago was 142,000. Which was the 20%. And today, if I collect the check, unfortunately, it is not only my name. It is my name and my wife's name. It's $1.4 over $1 million. And fully paid. And it's pure cash. And this is one of the greatest advantage of owning and renting it to someone. And actually, the returns on my initial equity is 10 times. 140 over to 1.4 million is 1,000%. I'm not trying to create something. I'm talking about factual things. The advantage of owning a property is simply you can get somebody else to rent out and that person is going to pay the mortgage. So now the key question here is this. Do you want to be the renter who paid towards that and so that I can get the $1.4 million check? Or do you want to own at one time of your life so that you can be an owner of that property?
I love that question. And congratulations, property owner.
Thank you. Yeah.
He is Mohammad Ismail Ghaffour, Chairman and CEO PropNix Limited, making a passionate argument for property ownership. Such a joy to have you with us.
Thank you.
This segment is brought to you by Sim Lien Group, creating space, creating homes.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.